Friday, I mentioned on the show that NASA had announced last week in a report from the National Academy of Sciences that they don't have the money to find all the asteroids that could wipe out human life if they hit the Earth, what scientists call an extinction event. No one else seems to be shocked or worried by this. But I am, which is why I called upon my friend Dr. Phil Plait, the bad astronomer and the author of a book called Death from the Skies, to calm me down here. Hi, Phil. How are you today?
I wish I could talk you down. We'll see.
Well, how much of a problem is this?
Well, first of all, I want to make a comment about your host not being here.
Yes.
I don't think he's really getting nose surgery because it's not September. No? Hello?
Testing? Hello? Testing, one, two. Testing. Hello?
Septum. It's a,
hello?
It's a medical joke.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe I should just stick with asteroids.
Hey, you're thinking of deviated August. That's what
that
you were thinking of.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I didn't think it could get worse than the first one.
Do you hear that? That's the sound of dials being clicked off everywhere across St. Louis right now.
Trish, I would think in all the time that we've worked together here, it can always get worse. Has been the lesson you should have learned
true.
By now. So Phil, Death from the Skies is the book, and now NASA says we can't even count the number of things from the skies that are going to kill you.
Yeah, this doesn't surprise me, and it's been a problem forever. The idea here is that the Earth seems like a pretty nice place to live. You know, we kind of evolved to like it, and so we've got a nice thick atmosphere, and we've got water and enough land to live on and all that. But in fact, over the long run, it's a pretty dangerous place to be. There are geological processes which change, and the climate changes, and all kinds of things. But sometimes things happen almost overnight, and, you know, you could ask the dinosaurs about this, but you can't because they're all dead.
Yes.
And one of the reasons they're dead is, you know, something the size of a mountain hit in the Gulf of Mexico 65 million years ago. And so we take this stuff seriously. When that object, which, you know, was 6 miles across, hit the Earth, it wiped out the vast majority of all life on this planet. And it took millions of years for the Earth to basically rebound and become diverse again like it is today. And it doesn't take an object that big to hurt us. Something the size of a football stadium could come in and wipe out a city. And so this is a threat we need to take seriously. And it's being taken, you know, kind of semi-seriously. Astronomers take it seriously. We want to be out there observing the skies, tracking these things, figuring out where they are. There are astronauts out there who want to characterize the threat, figure out what to do about it. The problem is getting money to do it. This is not a terribly expensive endeavor, but when times are really tight, it's hard to find the cash.
Didn't Congress mandate that NASA do this, that they have to find something like 90% of extinction event asteroids by 2020?
I'm sorry, I must have misheard you. Were you expecting, you know, something to happen because Congress said to do it?
Well, I'm not surprised because I'm thinking they said do it, but we're not going to give you the money to do it. Is that essentially it?
Yeah, unfunded mandates are a favorite from Congress. This happened in the first Bush administration when it was to, you know, go back to the moon and go to Mars. And it's like, that's a great idea. Now can you double NASA's salary so that they can actually do this?
Mm-hmm.
And NASA suffers from this a lot. People have a totally wrong idea about how much money NASA is given every year. When you survey people, the estimates go from 10% of the national budget up to literally more than half.
Mm.
In fact, NASA's budget is less than 1% of the federal budget. It's typically 0.7%. So you hear about this $250 million project, this $900 million project. It sounds like a lot, but it's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of what we're spending just to exist as a country. And in fact, if we want to continue to exist, it might be a good idea to spend money on things like looking at the asteroid threat, looking at how the sun can put the hurt on us, because that can happen as well. And in fact, we rely on a lot of the technology that NASA supports, like satellite technology and airplane, the aerospace technology. But NASA does this on a shoestring budget. When Congress says, we need you to do this, and they don't give NASA any more money, the question becomes, all right, what are we going to take money away from so that we can do this other thing?
But, Phil, why is it on us? I mean, this is going to be a global threat if an asteroid is going to hurtle towards the Earth. We don't know where it's going to land on the Earth, who it's going to impact, et cetera. Why is there not some sort of international group getting together and saying, you know what, let's all look out for these things?
Well, in fact, there is. This is a sort of a two-part answer. There is. The United Nations is interested in this sort of thing, and Rusty Schweikart, well, let me back up a little bit. There is a group of astronauts, astronomers, scientists, and engineers called the B612 Foundation. They're named after the asteroid the Little Prince was from in the novel, The Little Prince. And they are interested in basically mitigating this asteroid threat, figuring it out, characterizing it, and figuring out what to do to stop it. And Rusty Schweikart, who was an Apollo 9 astronaut and a very cool guy, is a member of this organization, and he actually talks to politicians about this, and he talks to the United Nations about this sort of thing. But in the end, you know, the other half of this is that, and I hate to say this because it sounds so ridiculous, but, you know, we're America. We are the world leaders in a lot of stuff. And that's very cool to be able to put on a bumper sticker, but it's also a responsibility that we have, and we need to face up to it. And we spend a lot of money on space travel and looking to the stars, and I think that the world in some ways does look to us. And the Europeans have a space agency, and you know, India and China, and they all do, but they're starting out. They're new with this sort of thing, and we've been doing it for 50 years. It's really about time we spent this money intelligently.
I know. Explain this to me. As I was reading an article about the asteroids, I saw this. Just a few sentences here. Astronomers were surprised last month when a large asteroid slammed into Jupiter. How big was it? Remember, Jupiter's not solid. Its surface is gas and liquid, so the impact of that meteor created what astronomers call a splash cloud, and that cloud was the size of the Earth.
Yep.
Really?
Yep. It's unclear how big this thing was. It was probably less than a mile across. I don't think it would be any bigger than that. It could have been substantially less than a mile across. It could have been a couple hundred yards across. Jupiter is, well, it's not liquid. The liquid is tens of thousands of miles beneath the surface. Basically, you can think of it as just being all atmosphere. It's just a big ball of gas. This thing basically entered the atmosphere of Jupiter, and as it penetrated into deeper and deeper levels, the pressure got bigger, and the rock, or whatever this thing was, exploded. The energy of motion, it was moving at probably 20 or 30 miles per second, which is incredibly fast.
Mm.
That energy of motion was turned into heat and light and an explosion, and it created a mushroom cloud the size of the Earth. And this was detected, in fact, by an amateur astronomer, I believe in Australia, who noticed a black spot on Jupiter. And then we turned bigger telescopes to it, especially ones that could detect infrared, where this sort of event is really obvious. And I was skeptical at first. I thought, well, we see black spots on Jupiter all the time. But the infrared telescope pictures were very clear that this was an impact event. And the fact of the matter is, nobody saw this thing coming. Jupiter's a long way off, and it's not like it's looked at all the time, so it's possible to miss something like this. But it makes you wonder, you know, we miss things that pass the Earth. The geometry of the way things pass us in space makes it hard for us to detect small objects, and I mean 100 yards across, something like that. And you read in the newspaper, astronomers surprised by 200-yard asteroid that missed us by a million miles yesterday. And that's, you know, that's not really what you want to be reading, although it's a whole lot better than astronomers surprised by giant impact. So, you know, we're trying to...
Astronomer wakes up, looks out window, sees asteroid. That's not what you want.
And really, that's the reality of it. These things are hard to see when they're small. Even the biggest telescopes, dedicated telescopes, might miss small rocks that are on, you know, the 50 to 100-yard size. And you don't see them until they explode in our atmosphere. And that's not really what you want. So we need to be spending money on this. It's a real threat.
I'm just confused and concerned. I mean, do we need to be walking around with hard hats? What's going on?
Oh, that won't help at all.
Okay, so just forget it. Just lay down.
That'd be like wearing a hard hat and you go by a construction site and the cinder block falls off the 35th floor. Good luck to you.
Well, the mushroom cloud that you said came from the asteroid hitting Jupiter. Could that emit anything into the atmosphere that could harm us potentially?
Oh, no. I mean,
no.
Jupiter is hundreds of millions of miles away. So, you know, what happens on Jupiter stays on Jupiter,
okay.
I suppose you could say. I don't think we're building any casinos there, but it's a good motto for Jupiter.
Hey, let
but,
me know
what,
when they
but,
do.
But, Phil, what happens if the Earth is hit by something as much as a mile wide?
A mile-wide impact, excuse me, a mile-wide object impacting the Earth may or may not be an extinction-level event. It depends on a lot of things. But if you watch the end of the movie Deep Impact, you know, spoiler alert here, a mile-wide chunk of rock and ice, a comet, hits the Earth in the Atlantic Ocean. And what happens for the next few minutes after that impact is pretty accurate. You'd get a tsunami hundreds of yards high that would be moving at hundreds of miles an hour that would sweep over the east coast of the U.S. and the west coast of Europe. You'd get a huge plume of vapor and dust which would settle over the Earth. It could cause all kinds of environmental effects, and it would be really bad. Now, and I'm glad you asked this question, because two things. One is that there's no object that big that looks like it's anywhere near going to hit us anytime soon. You know, we're decades or centuries away from any sort of object like that. So we don't have to worry about that too much. The other good news is that the odds of this happening at random are incredibly low. A 100-yard-wide object hitting the Earth happens, we think, roughly every few centuries. So it's probably not going to happen tonight. It's probably not going to happen tomorrow night. But by the year 2500, unless we do something about it, it'll probably happen. Is that going to kill everybody? Probably not. But it could do a lot of damage. And in the end, your specific odds, you right there listening to this broadcast right now, the odds of you dying in an asteroid impact are actually roughly about the same as you dying in an amusement park accident. And, you know, but it's low odds. But, you know, we take amusement park accidents seriously. We have inspectors and stuff that go out there and make sure that doesn't happen.
Yep.
The same thing should be done for asteroid impacts. We should be out there looking for them. It's a low-risk event, but it has enough potential that I think we should be spending at least a little bit of money on it.
Yep. I just keep thinking if we do get hit by something that big with a wave that big, et cetera, Laclede's Landing becomes beachfront property. We got a break. We'll come back in a moment here with Phil Plait, the Bad Astronomer. He's online at badastronomy.com, and he's also in print now with his new book called Death from the Skies. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris filling in for John Brown with Trish Gazelle here in the studio, and Dr. Phil Plait on the phone. Phil's the author of Death from the Skies, which is coming out in paperback when, Phil?
Actually, August 25th, so next week. It's been out in hardcover since last October, but I've got actually the paperback version in my hands. It's pretty cool. It's got a funny comic book kind of cover, and all the science, all the scares, thrills, chills, for less money. So there you go.
There you go. Not only about asteroids, but also scary stuff like gamma rays. Watch out for those, Trish. They'll get you every time. Phil, let's talk about your other job besides doing astronomy and blogging about it online, which, by the way, is one of the great science sites online, badastronomy.com. But you're also, as of this year, the president of the James Randi Educational Foundation. As you know, Randi and I are old friends, and I've been a longtime supporter of his work. Before we talk about stuff that the JREF is up to, how's Randi?
Randy's doing fine. He's had some medical issues lately, but I talk to him almost every day, actually, through the wonders of voice over internet, and he's doing fine. He's a fighter. You're not going to meet anybody in their 80s who's as feisty as he is, I think.
Yep.
He almost seems like a fictional character sometimes to me, because you can't really believe anybody can be like this.
Yeah.
But he's still really active. We send email to each other all the time about the latest outrage in pseudoscience. And I think he'll be doing this probably longer than anybody else I know will be.
I certainly hope so. He's one of my heroes. I was sorry I couldn't join you and Randi and Penn and Teller and the rest of the gang at the Amazing Meeting 7 last month in Las Vegas. But I know one of the things that you had there was a vaccination campaign. Explain that, if you would.
I'm so thrilled about this. Skeptics are generally considered to be dry, humorless deniers. Oh, I don't believe in anything, and I'm not going to ever have any fun, or I don't want to do anything. I just want to deny what you believe in. And it's not like that at all. We have basically one rule, and that is, you know, provide us the evidence. If you make a claim and you say, as a good example, vaccines cause autism, I want to see the proof. And when I look at the evidence for this, I see nothing. I see pseudoscience. I see stuff made up. I see outright lies by a lot of these groups. And what's happening is, in this particular case, that these anti-vaccination groups are scaring young parents into not giving their kids vaccinations. And we're seeing children in Australia and in America getting sick and sometimes dying from preventable diseases like measles and whooping cough. And so as part of our annual meeting, we have this meeting every year, the amazing meeting in Las Vegas, had over 1,000 people show up this time. Really pleased about that. As part of this meeting, we had a vaccination drive. People could donate money, and that money went to the Southern Nevada Health District in Las Vegas, which has very low vaccination rates due to a lot of reasons. And we wound up raising $12,000, which is enough to give 500 kids vaccinations.
Nice.
So this is a series of vaccines to prevent all kinds of illnesses. And 500 vaccines, that is a school's worth of kids in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm so happy about this because this is exactly what skeptics should be doing. We should have our feet on the ground and the rubber hitting the road and you know, all sorts of metaphors. But we should be out there doing stuff, doing good, being proactive. And if you see some sort of unmitigated baloney coming from somebody, it's one thing to blog about it like I do and talk about it on the radio or whatever. It's a totally different thing to go out there and do something about it. And that's what I'm trying to promote with the James Randi Educational Foundation and with these meetings. And we hit it out of the park with the vaccinations last month.
Well, that's terrific. As Randi has said many times, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. And these anti-vaccination people who, as you say, are literally causing harm by keeping science out of the physical well-being of children in their home countries and around the world. And by the way, the broadcasters who support them, I'm talking about you, Oprah, and people like you, I think are doing a real danger to society. And so I'm glad that there are people who will call them out on it and say, you know what, you make your claims, prove it. And by the way, proof doesn't mean anecdotal evidence. Oh, I heard from somebody, A, B, and C. It means actual scientific proof. And as you point out, Phil, there is no connection between vaccines and autism that has been proven yet.
In fact, there's been study after study that have been done, and some of these are huge studies that have been done very carefully, that clearly show there is no link between vaccinations and autism. The only link is that they happen around the same time in a baby's life. You tend to give them vaccinations around the same time that autism spectrum disorder diagnoses can be made. And so that's where the connection is. It's just in our heads. It's not a real thing. And I want to point out that when you mentioned Oprah specifically, that's because she supports Jenny McCarthy, the actress and comedian, who is the biggest mouthpiece for the anti-vaccination movement in the United States, her and her boy Jim Carrey. There's a group in Australia called the Australian Vaccination Network, a very misleading name. They're under investigation for making claims that are incorrect about vaccines. They're running a big misinformation campaign down there, saying all sorts of horrifying things. And really, the problem with being human, it's the human condition, is that we listen to anecdotes. And if we're scared by that anecdote, we're going to give it a huge amount more weight than the actual facts. And so when you say, my friend vaccinated her daughter and her daughter got autism, you're far more likely to take that one internally than to say, look, here are the studies that show no link. It just, you know, there's nothing going on there. But that's the sort of thing that as skeptics, especially with the JREF, with the James Randi Educational Foundation, that's the sort of information we're trying to get out there. And those are the sort of people we're trying to fight. Because look, you know what? If you want to waste your money throwing it at people like Sylvia Brown, who claim to speak to the dead, or you want to play the lottery, or you want to pay a psychic or an astrologer or any of that nonsense, you want to throw your money down the drain with that, that's your choice. I personally draw the line at killing babies. That's where I put it. And so that's the kind of thing I'm going to fight if I can.
Dr. Phil Plate, the president of the James Randi Educational Foundation, which is online at randi.org. That's R-A-N-D-I. .org, and in print in Death from the Skies, which will be out in paperback next week. Phil, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Paul, thank you very much.
I'm Paul Harris for John Brown on the Big 550 KTRS.